It's the Green Bay Packers come back from their bye week. We here on Railbird Central take a look back in history. We're joined by author Dennis Gullickson, who will give us the lowdown on the annual Green Bay History event coming up in November. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football today. We're talking about a team that's coming back from the bye. But before we get to that, we have a guest joining us on the phone this morning.
Expert interview.
We have Dennis Gullickson, author of two books on the Green Bay Packers, Before They Were the Packers, Green Bay's Town Team Days, and Vagabond Halfback, The Life and Times of Johnny Blood McNally. Mr. Gullickson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Mr. Caravu. Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. We're glad to have you back on the show now a second time. And it's interesting because it's now the second annual Green Bay History event you're hosting. And we'll talk about some of the specific aspects of the event in a moment. But can you just start off by giving us the broad scope of the event along with the when and where it's taking place?
I sure can. So we're again at Hagemeister Park in downtown Green Bay on historic Washington Street. Hagemeister Park is located at 325 Washington, and their phone number for people that are going to want to get tickets is 920-884-9909. So we're real excited to be back at Hagemeister. The folks down there do a great job. They're great to work with, and of course, the decor there is so in tune with the not only the Packers history but the city's history, and you know all sports history in Green Bay. So you know it's the perfect spot.
Okay, so getting to some of the aspects of the event here that'll happen, you're going to be honoring the 1897 Town Team of the Packers, kind of the predecessor of the current Green Bay Packers. Can you let us know what kind of a town team is and how it led into being what we currently know as the Packers as they are now?
I can. There's so much to talk about, and we'll get into some of the other aspects of the event. But when I set out to do this, I've kind of created a monster, you might say. Last year was great. It was very successful. My honoree last year, of course, was Lee Remmel. I needed to start with Lee, and of course, sadly, Lee has passed away in the interim. And this year, I really wanted to go back into the roots of football, not just in Green Bay, but all over the United States. And that does reach way back to the town team days and somewhat even earlier, you know, coming out of the Civil War. Of course, our country was in quite a malaise, and I think football, you know, kind of both reflected, you know, some of the battles, if you will, the conflict, but it also lifted the spirits quite a bit. So, the 1897 team in Green Bay, I could probably talk about for you know a day and a half. They actually were the third season of town team football in Green Bay, but they were the first championship team. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting that 100 years later, of course, the Packers pulled down a Super Bowl victory. But this was the first championship team, and it represented kind of a gelling of a whole lot of elements that went into that town team era. and we can talk about that. So it seemed just really important then that my honorees this year, you know, go back to the beginning where it all started. And so I'm really excited about that. We're going to have some of their descendants at the event. And that's really exciting because really, I don't think these guys have been gathered together, and obviously none of the guys will be there, at least as far as I know, but their families will. And their families are all rather well aware of the seminal contributions of you know, their grandfathers in most cases.
Can you, for the people who may not know, can you describe what a town team is? Because football back then looked so differently than what it is now. And I think people might be interested to just know some of the basic, you know, differences and things like that.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, I mentioned, you know, the ties to the Civil War. Town team football then was really crude. And you know, my co-author on Before They Were the Packers, Carl Hansen, and I have, you know, just had such a joyride since doing the book, and even while we were working on it, you know, talking about all of those nuances in football, and just how much the game has or has not changed. You know, even today, we'll probably hear our difference if Troy Aikman and Mr. Buck are covering the game. And I know everybody's got great love for them. I do too. But they'll talk about the game, you know, winning, being won in the trenches. And this really was the trenches. Passing was illegal. Passing was illegalized until 1906. And even then, the restrictions on it were pretty prohibitive. So most town teams stuck with the run anyway. It wasn't until 1912 that modern rules came to affect the pass, and more teams started to utilize it, and then it became, you know, such a part of the game today. But then, back then, when we're talking about the town team days, everything was a run. It was typically, you know, right into the gut of the line. And I often think in describing football at that time, it looked a whole lot more like a barroom brawl that it just kind of spilled out onto a field. So it was brutal, and there was a lot of slugging. You know, many of the accounts of football back from that time will talk about the slugging, and it was almost an accepted part of things that you know, action more akin to like wrestling or boxing was taking place in those trenches. Well, it's almost natural. You think about it, a bunch of guys colliding and a ball carrier running into that pile. A circus play was considered a run around the outside. And then just what happened is everybody chased the runner down and took him to the ground, and the same kind of action went on. So for spectators, it was like, what's going on out there? You know, it's like a legalized sanctioned form of fighting more than anything. Padding was absolutely minimal. These guys wore what was called moleskin, which was minor padding, like wearing a light jacket, really. They grew their hair out because they thought it protected their cranium some. There was a lot of fun about the long-haired kicker. You know, padding other than that resorted mostly to just a rubber nose guard, which was state-of-the-art at the time. And then eventually guys would start to fashion helmets. Some of them went to harness makers and had their own helmets made. And I think they took a bit you know, jaw-jacking from the other guys on the field. What's wrong with you, man? You know, you got to go with a helmet. But so, you know, that's some of the basic elements of what town team football looked like. Getting a team organized was a whole nother, you know, struggle for the guys.
Another, you know, you're going to honor not only the 1897 Green Bay Packers, you're going to be honoring another team through kind of a presentation at the event, the 1920 Green Bay East State Championship team, that of course included the Packers' own Curly Lambeau. Can you let us know more about that presentation?
Well, I can. I'll probably defer to the expert I'm going to have on hand that day, and that's actually Green Bay boy, Jim LaFave. Now, I say Green Bay boy. Jim and I attended Promontory High School together and graduated in 1972. But, you know, Jim's a hometown kid, and he is truly the expert on Notre Dame football. He talked a bit last year about the amazing connections between Notre Dame and Green Bay. Obviously, Curly Lambeau and Jim Crowley, you know, are a couple of for instances. But specifically at this year's event, he's going to talk about the 1920 Green Bay East team and a whole lot of gelling of those parts and how it indeed reflected, you know, both the evolution of football at Notre Dame, football in Green Bay, and of course, the Packers. So central to that story certainly is Crowley and Crowley's connection to Vince Lombardi in later years, and also of course Curly Lambeau. So I would invite people to make sure they come to the event. Obviously, there are fans of Notre Dame scattered all. Scattered is even the wrong word. Entrenched, given how serious they are about their football and their school, all across the United States.
Another aspect of the event here, you're going to have a presentation on the Hotel Northland, which is, you can kind of guide me through this, but I mean, they're currently trying to, I'm not sure if the word is renovate it and reopen it right now, but that has a rich connection to the Green Bay Packers that you can kind of help me fill in the blanks here.
Oh my, yeah, absolutely. The Hotel Northland is just a whole nother thread that's really exciting in this year's event. And, you know, as a kid who grew up in Green Bay, I watched the downtown, and I'll just put it the way I saw it, gutted back under, you know, some pretense of urban renewal or something. And it was just, you know, for a kid, you know, close to Green Bay and growing up at that time, watching these old buildings go down and a parking ramp go up and a big mall go up and all the small businesses just be laid to waste in the wake of urban renewal. It was sad. I understand, you know, the city fathers thought that was the right step, but it's so good to see the downtown Green Bay coming back. And it really is. You go down there on any given night, and there's a berth down there that just hasn't been in place for a long time, and that's really exciting. So these guys, Steve Front and Dennis Doucette, are overseeing the I'll call it the resurrection of the Hotel Northland. And I got to glimpse some of the pictures that they're going to show at the event of the renovation, of the refurbishing, and my gosh, it's glorious. It really is. And so people at the event will be able to actually see what is being restored there and the splendor that the Hotel Northland is going to once again you know, feature. And in the process, of course, Steve and Dennis will be talking about, you know, Vince Lombardi's press conference there when he came to town. You know, some really key moments like that, but more so, you know, back in the day, the Packers played, of course, at City Stadium, you know, at the east end of Walnut Street by East High School, and the Hotel Northland was central to all of the elan of a game day, of a game day weekend. That happened downtown. It didn't happened in Ashwaubenon or, you know, someplace out of town. It was just huge in the lifeblood of the city. And the Northland was just absolutely central with that. It was called the Million Dollar Hotel when it was constructed in the late 20s and opened. And, you know, people coming and going, Johnny Blood, you know, first coming to town once he signed with the Packers, and putting wax on his floor and getting a Victrola and partying and dancing as only John could do. That was part of that Hotel Northland connection too. So that's like a whole nother piece of the event that's just really exciting. Plus the menu, the four course menu for the event is from the vintage Hotel Northland menu. So the staff at Hagemeister Parks actually pick some items from the vintage Hotel Northland menu, and that's what will be served to guests at the event.
That's really cool. I think the connection there from the old to the new is really unique. And yet another part of this event here. We talked about the 1897 town team. Well, almost a century later, the Green Bay Packers win a Super Bowl championship in 1996, which will also be part of the presentation. Could you give me the lowdown on that?
Absolutely. I'm absolutely delighted to not only I have two national award-winning authors on the venue that day. Jim Lefebvre, who's won book awards for his books on Notre Dame football, Loyal Sons, and Coach for a Nation on Newt Rockne. But my featured speaker for the day is Chris Hobble, who does Sportsline, of course, on local radio up here and is pretty much an expert on the team as it sits today in 2015. But Chris did a great book on that, the run up to that 96-97 championship team. And it was interesting. I'm not always the smartest guy around, but as I put together the okay, I'm going to honor the 1897 town team, and then thought, well, okay, let's get Chris involved in this. And then it occurred to me, Bing, that we're celebrating championships basically a century apart, which is so neat because it really does bracket all of the success that Green Bay has had. Obviously the Packers have the most NFL championships. They've three-peated twice. So there's a lot of success to be had in Green Bay, and it really reaches all the way back to the town team years. And there were even about five, championships in Green Bay before the Packers were formed and joined the PFA in 1921. There were about five town team championships scattered in those years. So this town's had a lot of success football-wise.
And one more aspect here, you're going to be doing, I think this is really unique. You're going to be having an appraisal of sports items during the program. Almost seems to me be like Antiques Roadshow, which airs on PBS. Is that kind of what I'm getting here?
You've got it. And sometimes I get my head out of my backside enough to pay attention to what's going on. And last year, just unannounced, a gentleman brought in some stock certificates from 1923 and 1935, obviously well protected then. And I didn't quite know what to do with those because it wasn't part of my plan last year. And that gave me pause to think, hey, there's a lot of stuff out there people have. So, yeah, absolutely. If people who are listening, Chris Neurath, who's actually from Menominee, Michigan originally, and I think a UWGB grad, is with Heritage Auctions now, out of Dallas. And Chris is going to be on hand. He's going to talk a bit. I'm going to do a little Q&A with Chris, during the program. But between 3:30, when the matinee show ends, and say 6 o'clock, when the evening show begins, Chris is going to be set up in the lounge area at Hagemeister Park when he first walked in. And indeed, we're going to be doing what you might call an antiques off-road show, Green Bay football history style. And so I'm excited. I want people to bring things in, certainly Packer items, certainly early Packer items. But even, if I get somebody to bring in one of those, I think it was Norel was the name of the company that made the rubber nose guards or something. Even reaching back to the town team days, well, that'll be awesome. I know I've got a gentleman hopefully going to follow through who's bringing in a pen and pencil set from the 1944 championship Packers. So it's just going to be exciting. And, you know, I use the word appraisal, and I think, okay, that sounds like, you know, what's this thing worth? But really the value is the stories, you know, the significance, the stories surrounding these things. How did this pen and pencil set come to this gentleman? How did this gentleman with the stock certificates, I sure hope he comes back, come by those? So, you know, it's the value of the narrative more than, you know, any kind of price tag on these things, most of them being probably priceless.
Well, we'll have to get Antiques Roadshow to come and do a segment with you sometime. That would be really neat. But Dennis, let's talk about tickets, because you do have some offers here, kind of a little bit of an incentive for people to buy them.
I do. Now, tickets are $30, which is up just $3 from last year, and I think a real bargain at that.
I think when it comes with a four-course meal, I think that's more than fair.
Okay, good. And, you know, obviously I'm looking to make the event affordable and enjoyable and educational and exciting and really to truly have people, as I say, I think everybody who sits at a game at Lambeau Field should absolutely appreciate what they're watching that particular day. And obviously with the success of our team now, it's awful easy to sit at Lambeau and be pretty excited. But to have a real appreciation for the evolution of football in Green Bay and the fact that we've hung on to this team through some really serious crossroads, and yet we've still got this great team on the field any given Sunday. So that's really exciting. So tickets are $30. People can order those, again, by calling Hagemeister at 920-884-9909. And this week, and then going forward, but every week, I'm going to have a drawing for a couple of Chris Hobble's books, signed by Chris at this point, called Year of Champions. And it's a beautiful book with lots of color photographs on the 96-97 Super Bowl team. And so what we'll do at the end of the week is all the people who have ordered tickets to that point, we'll just draw some names out of a hat. And, you know, two people a week will win a book from Chris, you know, free, obviously, complimentary copy. And then they can get that book, you know, even personalized by Chris at the event. So, yeah, a little incentive, a little perk to get your orders in. Last year we filled up, so you know, I would suggest that, you know, getting your tickets early is probably a good idea at this point.
Well, what we'll do at Cheesehead TV is provide a link to Hagemeister Park's website, so people know they can go back and look and refer to the schedule and how to buy tickets and things like that. But thank you so much, Dennis, for joining us on the show this morning. It was great to get a rundown of that and a little bit of history as well. And we'll send people your way, all right?
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that so much. And, yeah, it's going to be another great event. Next year's already taking shape and looking even better. So I'm excited to do it.
Very good. Very good. Thank you so much, Dennis. Take care, all right?
Thanks always, Brian.
Okay. Dennis Gullickson, author of Before They Were Packers and Vagabond Halfback, joining us on the show today, giving us the lowdown on his annual Green Bay history event that is really cool. If you like the Green Bay Packers and like more than just the current team, you like learning about the past and you know how it influences the present, I think this is a really neat event and you would enjoy it. And like I said, $30 for a ticket that includes a four-course meal. I mean, I would practically pay $30 for a four-course meal alone. On top of that, you get this hours-long presentation on all these several aspects involved that are really, really neat. So go check it out. I highly encourage it. I've back when I was the editor of the Maple Street Press season preview magazine, we hired Dennis to write articles for the publication. So he's a guy who knows what he's talking about, a trusted and reliable and authoritative source on the history, especially the old history of the Green Bay Packers. There's not many people out there that, you know, you can talk knowledgeably about the pre-Packers period, basically how they transitioned from a town team into a football team as we know it now. But Dennis is one of those guys. So glad to have him as we continue on with the show here.
Packers news of the day.
You know, I just wanted to touch on one thing basically today. And you know, it's thank you for joining us here on Rail Bird Central. We've been off for a week now as I took off for vacation during the bye week and back now, but kind of the one big thing that happened in the interim was an article published on Sunday by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on defensive lineman LaTroy Guyon. And you know, to an extent, it was nothing new, nothing breaking news, but what it was an investigative report into LaTroy Guyon, and that brought to light many aspects that have never been reported before, especially his history of domestic violence or alleged domestic violence. And there's been a lot of reaction, both positively and negatively, to this article. And, it kind of leaves interpretation open to the reader whether the Packers did the right thing by re-signing LaTroy Guyon this offseason, after his high-profile arrest. I mean, that was certainly nothing new, and something that got a lot of attention. But it's the other aspects of LaTroy Guyon's history that were brought to light that I think a lot of people, maybe almost everyone, didn't know before. And I myself am conflicted about how I feel about this, because there was a lot of things here that, you know, LaTroy Guyon has not been found guilty of. There are some things, certainly, that he has, you know, been convicted of. But it's almost been a slap on the wrist, especially this past, you know, the arrest this past April, I believe it was, where he was found with the, you know, very large amount of marijuana, in addition to a gun that was reported as stolen, unregistered, and a large amount of cash on top of that, to the tune of over $190,000. There's that aspect of it, but I think what also you know brought to light here was several things in which, you know, LaTroy Guyon is by a police officer through informants saying that he bankrolls a drug trade that includes relatives, so in essence enabling relatives to, you know, stay involved in a drug trade. He's been arrested charged multiple times with domestic violence, in which two of the three times he's been charged, the charges have been dropped. And to me, it's almost reminiscent of the Greg Hardy situation in terms of, you know, the woman that, you know, originally brought forth the charges on Greg Hardy, later dropped them. Not necessarily because it didn't happen, but because a lack of evidence or thing, you know, didn't want to be involved with the ramifications and things like that. And that, you know, it's just there's so much, you know, mounting evidence here that, you know, incidents of LaTroy Guyon acting in probably not the best way, that it's becoming hard to believe that he's a good guy. And you know, I personally would steer very far clear of LaTroy Guyon in many of these you know, situations here, and perhaps more than anything, I was disappointed with Mike McCarthy's response during the press conference to the question about LaTroy Guyon, I believe posed by Michael Cohen of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who co-authored this investigative report along with a colleague whose name I forget because he's not a typical sports writer. He's more of the courts reporter, deals more with things of legal nature for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But anyway, Mike McCarthy basically, without commenting on the article, says, "I thought it was garbage." And I thought that was really an easy way off for basically Mike McCarthy to give the lasting impression, and the only thing anybody can will remember from his point of view is that Mike McCarthy thought it was garbage without saying what he thought was garbage. So essentially, nobody can poke any holes in Mike McCarthy's opinion. And I thought, I'll say this, I thought Mike McCarthy's response was garbage. I thought that. If you want to call it garbage, then you better say what it is about it is garbage, because I don't think domestic violence is something to be treated lightly. And you know, to an extent, I think maybe Mike McCarthy has been duped by LaTroy Guyon, because in his comments taken from old press conferences and things like that, in which he's been asked about LaTroy Guyon in the past, let's say, you know, I remember he commented upon him during the NFL Combine back when LaTroy Guyon, this was just after he was arrested, I believe, he was a free agent or whatever, and you know, Mike McCarthy says he's been a positive influence in the locker room or some, you know, I'm paraphrasing here. Don't quote me on that, but it's something very much along those lines. And I can understand, like, a person can be very different, you know, in your dealings with them. What you see in the locker room. I don't have any qualms that LaTroy Guyon could very much be a charming individual and a positive influence. And this, of course, has nothing to do with his on-field play, which has been fine. It's been NFL caliber and NFL worthy, but it hasn't been great. He's not a Pro Bowl caliber player by any means. I almost think to an extent that maybe Mike McCarthy and perhaps other players, they provided comments from a few players. But are they being duped by LaTroy Guyon and not only seeing him in the work environment and not knowing what he's like away from it? LaTroy Guyon made veiled threats to the mother of his child in terms of, like, you know, you better watch out when my playing career is done or my profession is done, you better watch out. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to take that. Is that a death threat from LaTroy Guyon? These things just aren't very kosher. If I were the Packers now, I don't cut LaTroy Guyon now, I suppose. I mean, knowing what I know now, would I have re-signed him? No, I probably wouldn't have, from the aspect that, you know, this whole thing happened prior to, I'm not sure if it happened prior to the start of free agency. Well, it did. I know it happened. That they might not, if the total ruling may not have come down yet, but he was arrested prior to the start of free agency and they had the draft. I mean, they certainly could have, they had plenty of time to prepare to get more defensive linemen if they had to get by for this season. And in fact, they had already signed B.J. Raji. I mean, to an extent, that was kind of that could have been one way in which the Packers, you know, could have gotten by. And I understand, like, they really didn't know the extent of how good B.J. Raji would be or anything like that. But still, I think the Packers could have certainly gotten by and prepared, you know, to get more depth had they gotten to. But I mean, now that they've signed him, I don't blame the Packers for cutting him. You know, it's so tough to say, should a person be blackballed by the Packers or by the NFL, when Latroy Guyon basically has you know, never been convicted of anything major. And so, you know, because of that, should he be blackballed? I'm not sure, but boy, you better be good though. If you're not to avoid that, you better be a really, really good player. And I'm not sure Latroy Guyon is a good player. He's probably an average player in the NFL. Some people might disagree with that. It is what it is. I like I said, disappointed more than anything in Mike McCarthy's response to that. And that's my two cents on this published article that came out. As kind of the biggest news over the bye week in the world of the Green Bay Packers. But if we continue on here with the next segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, what we're looking forward today is the first post-bye injury report being released Wednesday afternoon. And what this will, you know, basically include is, you know, the suspects who are going to appear on it, the players. The interesting part will be the extent of how much they practice. You know, these practice reports that come out daily, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, when teams are playing, include the practice participation, either full, limited, or did not practice. I think that's going to be the interesting part to see, you know, to what extent are these guys taking part, and maybe, you know, if they are a full participant, might that indicate they're close to returning? So, I mean, take a look at all the guys we're really wondering about here, starting with Davante Adams, who's been out, you know, basically a month now with an ankle injury. Safety Morgan Burnett with the calf injury. Defensive lineman B.J. Raji with the groin injury. Linebacker Nick Perry with the shoulder injury. All these guys, it's going to be really interesting to know, are they practicing? And many of them practiced on Monday, so we know they'll probably practice. But are they going to be limited? Are they going to be full? And is that going to be an indication of how close they are to returning? And perhaps the biggest one of all, wide receiver Ty Montgomery, just because it's the most recent injury, and I think, you know, maybe that makes it a little more notable, could end up being the furthest away from this group because his injury is the most recent. It'll be interesting to see if he takes part in practice on Wednesday. And maybe one kind of final note here for the show, just because I think this is such a rare occasion. Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers Wednesday evening is taking part in a private autograph session at Legends of the Field in Delafield, Wisconsin. And I know you can drop off items to be signed. And I, you know, because it's a private signing, you know, they're not publicizing when he will be there, but, you know, knowing the Packers practice, it's going to be sometime during the evening hours. But what this is, if you've ever wanted Aaron Rodgers' autograph, there is so few opportunities to do so. And it's not going to be cheap. But I know had somebody contact me on social media basically saying that they have something of personal value, kind of a memento, memorabilia that they, you know, kind of, you know, personally kind of value, and wondering how to get Aaron Rodgers' autograph on it. I had at the time no response, just because he doesn't sign autographs. He's kind of the guy, you know, once you reach so many years of experience with the Green Bay Packers, you aren't the type that's riding the bikes to practice anymore. Just, I mean, because he would be mobbed, and that's kind of understandable when you're one of the most recognizable faces, not only in Green Bay, but, you know, the nation. Aaron Rodgers isn't riding bikes to practice because he would be absolutely mobbed. And, and the Packers want to avoid that situation. But how and do you get Aaron Rodgers' autograph? Well, tonight is one of the rare and few opportunities to do so. And like I said, it's going to cost, you know, hundreds of dollars. I think the minimum cost is $300. But if you had something that you had a memento that is of personal value, this is a rare opportunity to do so. Like I said, Legends of the Field in Delafield, Wisconsin, tonight, if you were interested in doing so. And there's more information in our Packers calendar post at 24/7 Sports and a link there. If you wanted to find out more information, you can do so through that avenue. But that'll do it for today's show, folks. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us on the show. Thank you to Dennis Gullickson, author of two books on the Green Bay Packers, for talking to us about the upcoming event on Green Bay history coming up at Hagemeister Park in Green Bay. So interested in seeing that when it happens in November, the day before the Packers take on the Detroit Lions. Should be really, really cool. But we'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Sometimes a River by String Cheese Incident on Psi Fidelity Records. We'll see you next Friday. Cleaning you.